Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happy, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing it with your friends, family, not only here in the United States, but across the world. Today, we have a very special guest. I will be talking a little bit about the financial world because of the recent election. But you know what? One of the biggest topics nowadays is many, many people are vastly unprepared if something happens. And I'm just going to set this up. You know what? Many people just like you, you have loved ones like grandma, grandpa, mom and dad. You might have a brother, sister. You might have, that has health issues, has disabilities. And or in the situation with my sister where her husband passed in unexpectedly. I mean, she was, you know, coming back from travel, business travel. She comes home. She's thinking she's going to have a great dinner, but she found her husband who had passed away 2 days earlier from a heart attack. And the reality is she now has to deal with an estate. She now has to deal with all these things. And if she didn't have the right documents put together the right way, it would have been a mess. She could have spent years going through probate, wasting a lot of money. And the weird thing is, you know what? It's a lawsuit filed against his estate and his estate pays for it. It's nuts. So this is the reason why we have Jennifer Cermak here. She's the CEO and Chief Counsel of Posterity Legal, a national law firm that focuses solely on estate planning. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here. You know what? Just a little bit about Jennifer. Most people don't know. Besides being passionate about estate planning, she used to serve a term as the 10th Circuit Lieutenant Governor of the American Bar Association, Vice President of Women's Law Student Association. She's a member of the American Bar Association. She's got a lot of other things, but she's also a national champion when it comes to black belt in the field of Taekwondo. So don't mess with her. She knows what she's doing. I just thought that would be fun to mention. But folks, let's get to it. We've all seen the person who passed away in that dark, empty, scary house that sat there for a couple of years because you don't realize this, but it probably sat in probate. Or you've seen friends that have gotten ill and unable to take care of or make decisions for themselves. And then they have the state of California or whatever state you're in make those decisions for you. And the reality is you can have the documents that would enable you to take care of the ones you love, save your life financially, physically, the whole shot. And again, that's the reason why we have Jennifer here. So Jennifer, could you start by just talking about what a will and trust is, what a power of attorney is? But let's just start with the wills and trusts.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I started this practice because in the beginning of my career, I was a litigator. I was in court every day doing a lot of divorces, a lot of criminal defense, and a lot of probates, okay? And while I'm litigating these probates, I'm watching families destroy themselves. And it really, you know, stuck in me that there's got to be a better way, right? And so once you get into practice and you start exploring these things, you realize there is a better way. Law school didn't even teach me about it. And so imagine the public not knowing about this. Okay. And so there are some basic definitions here because a last will and testament is your last testimony of what you are willing or intending to happen after you die. What you're doing when you create a will is you are writing down your testimony. Okay. Because you're not going to be here to explain. So where is testimony heard? In court, okay? So if all you have is a last will and testament, you're actually guaranteeing that your family's going to go through the court system after you die, right? They don't teach you that in law school, okay? And that there's a private way of doing things. So really, this is the difference between the public forum, which is probate court, versus the private forum. The private forum is what you would know as a trust, okay? So most people don't even also realize that they have an estate. I'm here to tell you 99% of people in this country have an estate. What is an estate? An estate is everything you own. It is all of your titled property, like houses, cars, your signature property, like bank accounts, 401ks, IRAs, those kind of things, all the way down to the socks in your drawer. Even your body is considered part of your property and part of your estate. Okay. So if you pass away or you become incapacitated, you can choose to do nothing and have the court take care of all of these decisions of who gets what or how you're going to be taken care of in a nursing home or this, that, and the other. Or you can make the choice to make a private estate, which would include a trust and powers of attorney and all of those kind of things. So that's really what it is. It's the definitions of those terms. A last will and testament is just your last testimony that's going to go through the government probate system, or a trust. Which actually a trust is a contract that builds a legal structure very similar to an LLC. Okay. And so you really want to look at a private estate and all of your assets like a company. Certainly looks like a company to me. Got money coming in, money going out, right? You have all these puzzle pieces working in tandem here. And so when you make this contract, you build this legal structure, and then you take your assets, you put it into that legal structure, and then you start running it privately. So that's your first motivation, really, in making a private estate, is you don't want the government, you know, just making these decisions of the who, what, when, where, and all that if you die or become incapacitated. So I tend to really dislike probate because I was a probate attorney. Like I said, most lawyers aren't even taught about trusts in law school. We're always taught about probate and wills. Not realizing that there's this private way to settle estates and take care of people outside of the court system. Because we're lawyers, right? We are trained to go through the judicial system. So there is a better way. But, you know, if you're going to go through wills and trusts, if that's all you want, just understand that you're making the choice there to go through that government system. All 50 states have a probate code. All of them do. They all deal with the same subjects. They're all just a little different, right? There are different thresholds and different procedures and stuff, but they're all going to deal with debts, you know, beneficiaries, selling of houses. So, you know, because pretty much everybody has, you know, those kind of same similar things within their estate.
Okay. So here's the big question. What are they looking at from a cost standpoint and a duration of time before that estate's actually settled?
So, you know, I can't give you that answer. Okay. Because costs. So let me give you a little insider here. There is, when you look at a probate code, there is an order of who gets paid, right? You're always going to have court costs paid out of the estate first. Always. That's how courts make their money, pay judges, pay, you know, court clerks and all of that. Then the next in line is going to be the attorney. The attorney is always going to get paid next in line. Your beneficiaries are actually going to be all the way down here. All right. The beneficiaries are actually the last to get distributions after the court case is over. So when you look at the statutes, when you're talking about court costs and attorney's fees, about half of the states out there have actually set, you know, limits. These are these like sliding scales that say something, okay, if your gross estate, right? So we're talking everything's value. We're not removing the debt. We're talking about the gross, right? If your gross estate is from $0 to $100,000, then the attorney gets 3%. If it's from 100 to 250, then the attorney gets an additional 2.5%. So they have half the jurisdictions out there have these set fees. The other half say reasonable attorney's fees. Okay. Well, that's problematic because what's your definition of reasonable? I bet your definition is probably quite different than mine. You know, I think $400 an hour is reasonable, right? But anyway, you spin it actually, because even if you have that set figure there, there is always a footnote on that sliding scale stuff that says these are minimums. So I know the minimum I'm going to make on your estate as it goes through probate. Now, jurisdictions also have these time limits on them. There's something like when you die, your executor has a set amount of time to actually file this probate action if you don't have a will or if you do have a will, okay? So your executor has to file this petition for probate. When that happens, generally something called an automatic temporary injunction goes onto your assets and freezes them. The reason why the court freezes your assets is because if you, you know, we don't want your kids taking all the money out of the checking account if you have a credit card that needs to be paid off first, right? So we have these minimum freezers, okay? If everything goes perfect, sometimes it's 6 months, sometimes it's 8 months. It depends on the jurisdiction that you're in. But I just know from experience, it is never going to be that perfect case, right? So even if we have these minimum of freezers in probate court, usually probates take about a year to 2 years. It depends on the jurisdiction that you're in and how many cases are going through the probate court. It also depends on whether your beneficiaries fight or if somebody challenges your estate. Okay, so sometimes this can drag out for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. There are also celebrities that have had their estates challenged in probate court because they didn't make a private estate. That, for instance, Martin Luther King's probate estate is still open to this day. Okay?
Oh, wow.
Over 50 years later, and they are still fighting in court over, you know, his royalties, name and likeness and all this. So, you know, that's an extreme example. But probates, the problem with this, and I'm probably going to make some attorneys upset about this, but there is a financial incentive for me, as if you choose me as your probate attorney, there's a financial incentive for me to keep you in probate court, okay? For as long as possible. We're going to keep continuing it. We're going to keep kicking the can down the road because every time I show up to the probate case, I get another $400 an hour, right? So there's like this weird financial incentive there that I know I'm going to get guaranteed fees through the statutes. So we look at about a year and a half to 2 years after death of a final disposition. But if somebody's fighting, I mean, and if kids are fighting over diamond rings or the house or this, that, there's this like weird financial incentive. Oh, they're fighting. I get to go to court more often. I'm going to kick this can down the road and I'm going to, you know, keep extending it for 4, 5, 6 years. Because I'm going to make more money that way, right? Wow. So, you know, there are
these
minimums.
Second, Jennifer, we got to take a break. Okay. Guys, this is wonderful. Stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Jennifer Cermak.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I just want to let you know all the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. They're all dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. By the way, you want to go check out Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook. There's an Insiders Club where you can get gifts, all sorts of stuff. Now, I want to bring us back to Jennifer Cermak. We're talking about the whole probate estate process. It was real interesting. She was just talking about probate and about how long it can go. You know what? I just got to share this, Jennifer. There was an attorney I worked with a long time ago when I first started. Just so I could understand the probate process, he brought me into probate court. The judge says, who's making a claim on this estate? And there's like eight or nine people. And he goes, those are all the hillbilly relatives.
Yeah.
And I just started laughing. I go, what do you mean? He goes, people, they find somebody's probate in the paper. They've got the same last name. They'll say, hey, I don't have any money. Maybe they'll give me some money, or maybe they'll give me money for going away. Maybe you've experienced that. I don't know.
I was shocked the first time I experienced that. And yes, you are absolutely right. And we had a claim on the estate. And I said, who is this? And my clients had no idea, never met this person. And it was just because these people troll the obituaries, you know, and basically all these, everything that goes through the judicial system has to be made public. Okay. That's like a constitutional thing. So it used to take some work. Like if you wanted to find out about somebody's probate case, you used to have to drive to that jurisdiction, go to the court clerk. If you've ever been to a court clerk, they have these long tables. You ask them to pull the file and like the clerk would stand over you as you like sifted through it and stuff. Now it's all online. So I control the probate cases from, you know, the beauty of, you know, the sanctuary of my home, and then just file real quick challenge. And the first time this ever happened to me, I was shocked. And it's because these people know that it is cheaper for me to just pay them off to go away than it is to spend thousands of dollars proving in court that they're not an heir, right?
So in other words, somebody get $5,000 or $10,000 just to go away.
Yeah, basically. I was shocked the first time, you know, that ever happened to one of my cases. It's crazy, crazy world out there.
It's interesting that the legal system, if you're getting paid by the hour, I mean, hey, the longer you work, the more money you're going to make. So,
I mean, it's just a fact of life, you know? So, I mean, that's, if you think about it, that's how attorneys make their money, is in court. Mm-hmm. You know, or at least, you know, these kind of litigation, state litigators. And so, yeah, isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a financial incentive to keep your family fighting in court.
Yeah. With that, we've already talked about, you know, what makes up a trust, Jennifer? What will they need to do in order to make that work as opposed to going into court?
Yeah, sure. So a trust is a contract, okay? It's a contract that, I know that sounds awkward, you make with yourself, okay? But what you're really doing when you make this contract is you're building something called a legal structure. And this is where I was talking about, it's very similar to a business, like an LLC. An LLC is also a contract. It's just that that contract is called an operating agreement, whereas your personal legal structure is called a trust agreement, okay? And so you're making this legal structure to making a private estate to protect your assets. But here's the thing. Once you actually make this legal structure, there is a imperative step you must take after that, which is called funding, okay? Now, I'm not talking about paying your trust $2,000. That is not what I'm talking about. Funding is a legal term. And what that means is taking your assets and putting them into the trust, okay? I use this metaphor. It's very much like a fireproof safe, okay? If you go out and you buy a fireproof safe and you bring it home, cool. But now you actually have to take your jewelry and your birth certificate and stuff and put it into the fireproof safe. Okay, because if you don't do that and your house burns down, then you have an empty safe. It didn't protect anything. Your birth certificate burned up in the fire. So think about the probate court as the fire and your legal structure trust as that safe. Okay, so once you build this thing, then you have to go through this process of taking your house and your cars and all of that and retitling them. It's actually a retitling process where you're either retitling that asset to the trust, or you're making the trust the beneficiary of that asset. And that is getting those assets into this fireproof safe so that they're not left out and getting burned by the probate court, okay? So that's the process of it. It's can be cumbersome depending on what your situation is. You know, if you've got six houses out there, yeah, that's gonna be a little bit more cumbersome than somebody who has one house, right? But you got to do it, because if you don't and your houses are left outside of this trust, they're going to go through probate. That's it. That's the back end default way of removing your name off that title and transferring it to somebody who's living. So I also find that if people don't complete this process successfully and completely, that they will end up with this weird hybrid where half their assets are being settled privately, no court needed. And then the other half are going through the court system. And I've had people come up to me, you know, many times where my father passed away. Why am I going through probate? He came to your firm. He made a trust. Why are we going through probate? Well, it's because he never took his assets and put them into the trust, right? So that's really what it is. It's a trust is a contract that builds a legal structure. This legal structure, your first motivation is to keep your estate out of court.
Okay, so here's the next question. You mentioned real estate, okay? Now, is there any asset protection that a living trust provides any of the assets that are in the trust?
So there are multiple different types of trusts out there, okay? The vast majority of people are going to need a revocable living trust, okay? That is your basic keep me out of probate trust. Now, once you create a legal structure, then you can start playing with things that are on this trust spectrum, okay? And so when it comes to real property, a revocable living trust is not going to save your property, okay? From, let's say, you were in a car accident, it was your fault, you really, really hurt somebody on the other side, your insurance only paid like half of that. You're still going to be liable for the other half of that car accident that's due, okay? That necessarily is not going to, your trust is not going to save you from that. However, there are on this spectrum of trust, other types of asset sheltering trusts. Now, they're not revocable. They get towards the irrevocable side or the semi-irrevocable side, okay? And what does that mean? A revocable trust, you can revoke it at any time. You can change it at any time, okay? Revoke also means destroy. On the other spectrum is irrevocable. Irrevocable is once you make that and put a piece of property inside of it, that's it. You can't destroy it. You can't change it. And then you have these ones in the middle. And there are things like asset sheltering trusts, Medicaid qualifying trusts, where we can save your house from nursing homes. So in the middle and over towards the irrevocable side are a breadth of different legal structures that we can use as tools, depending on your situation, where we can shelter assets from creditors and predators.
So folks, this is the reason why you need somebody who's knowledgeable in understanding these different types of trusts, because all too often people feel that they have a regular revocable living trust that Jennifer talked about, that it has asset protection. And she just indicated it doesn't. You have to have a specialized trust that does that. So don't think that, you know, dad got in a car accident and he ran somebody off the road, killed somebody, you're going to be okay because you have a trust, because that doesn't work that way. So it's very important that you do those things. So let's, you know what, we're going to need to take a break real quick, or this is going great, but going real fast. So folks, stick with us. We'll be right back with more Jennifer Cermak.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, again, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. You know what? We have Jennifer Cermak of the CEO and Chief Counsel of Posterity Legal. She's been talking about wills, trusts, probate, but now we're going to get into some things that are really, really very important. I think they're documents. Personally, I feel they could save your life. And these are the things that are called powers of attorney for healthcare and financial. Let's have people understand what that does for somebody, the capacity issues that go along with that.
Yeah. So in an estate plan, any attorney worth their weight in salt is going to make you a comprehensive estate plan. That's not just a trust, right? That it's these powers of attorney documents. And there's other documents in there too. Steve, you just said something. I personally think that the power of attorney appointment documents are the most important because these are where when you're alive, you're nominating somebody to take care of your finances for you if you're incapacitated, or on the medical side, making medical decisions for you if you become incapacitated. That's pretty darn important, okay? And I personally think that the power of attorney stuff while you're alive is the most important, because if you don't have those documents, then you become incapacitated, let's say, then your family has to go to court to get something called a guardianship over you, or a conservatorship. You might have also heard it called that, right? Just to be able to pay your bills, to legally have access to your checking account, to legally log into, you know, your online banking and pay your electric bill, okay? So you need to make these appointments and make these legal documents while you're alive and you have capacity, so that you're nominating somebody. Hey, if I end up, you know, in a nursing home, I want this person to take care of my money and finances. If you don't do those nominations and make those legal documents while you're alive and of sound mind, then your family's going to have to go to court and a judge will make those determinations for you.
What actually happens when the state has a conservatorship over somebody?
It's going to be basically audited. Whoever is nominated as your conservator or guardianship is going to have to check in with the state, keep inventory. You know, it's basically like asking Big Daddy for permission, mm-hmm. right? And so you have this weird thing. So, you know, you also will have these hearings where brother and sister are fighting in court over who's going to take care of mom, right? And then they're fighting each other about this. And then a judge, this third party you've never met before, is ultimately going to make that determination. Sometimes, though, the judge, and I've had this happen before, where the judge says, neither of you are qualified. So I'm going to appoint a court-appointed, it's called a guardian ad litem, a GAL. So it's a third-party attorney to make these financial decisions. So now, not only is the court monitoring all of these finances, but then you have this third-party attorney that's never met you before determining whether your electric bill gets paid or not. It's insane. It's nuts. I don't know why people go through this and why they don't just preemptively make these nominations.
I have heard that basically they're taking in the assets and liquidating them. And it's just a big pile of cash sitting somewhere that earns a basic interest rate from a basic interest rate banking account and then gets distributed. Is that the size of it, or?
Yeah, it can be. Like if a judge orders that to happen, that is like the default is liquidation of assets. And yes, that happens all the time. And, you know, it's basically it's when you liquidate those assets, they'll put them into a monitored account. It's called a uniform trust account, UTA, and they'll put it in a uniform trust account that then, you know, it's like a savings account. It gets 1% or something like that, and then gets distributed. And there's an annual accounting that has to happen and all of that kind of stuff. So not exactly the best, like, fiscally responsible thing to do. But at that point, you know, the court doesn't have really any other choice.
Mm-hmm. And it really, really just says, hey, you can either have the documents or have the court make the decision for you.
That's so the choice. Yes.
Let's now talk about a durable power of attorney over healthcare.
Mm-hmm. I actually think this is the most important document, along with other legal another legal document called your medical directives. Those two go aligned. The medical power of attorney is where you're appointing somebody to make healthcare decisions for you if you're incapacitated. Now, of course, that could be like Alzheimer's or dementia, but that also could be you're unconscious in an emergency room because you were in a car accident, right? Who's going to make those decisions about your care? So that's what the power of attorney appointment legal document is. And then you follow it up with this other legal document called healthcare directives, or you've also might have heard it called a living will. What those are rules about how you want your body to be treated. Remember, your body's your property. So you can say, I want a blood transfusion. I don't want a blood transfusion. All right. And then whoever your POA that you've not denominated as has to follow your rules. So if you're unconscious in an emergency room and the POA comes in, then them and they're your advocate to the doctors. So they're talking to the doctors for you and they're reading your medical directives and they're saying, you know, mom said she didn't want a, blood transfusion. They have to follow what you want. Okay. If you haven't put a rule about your medical care, because there's a million and one different ways you can become injured or, incapacitated in a hospital or something, right? And so if there isn't a specific rule, then that's where your POA takes over and starts making these conversations and decisions based on their discretion.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of my clients, the way she said it, she goes, this gives me the power to be an advocate for my husband and to move him away from a bad hospital, fight with a doctor, fight with the insurance company to make sure the cares that for my loved one gets. Is that pretty much the size of it?
Yeah, I mean, most people, see, that's the thing that also blows their mind. They think that just because you're married, that your husband or wife are just going to automatically be your power of attorney. And that is not the case. One of the most famous cases was Terri Schiavo. Do you remember that? Right. So Terri Schiavo was in a coma for 7 years while her husband and parents fought each other in living probate court over whether to pull the plug or not. So that family completely destroyed themselves. You know, the only people that won were the attorneys. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe the hospital, too, because they kept, got the bill for 7 years. Right. But they completely destroyed themselves. And it's because she did not have these documents. And just because you're married doesn't mean your spouse is automatically going to be able to have that kind of say. So these are very, very important documents. And if you do get a lot of guff, from a hospital like that, it is probably because they've been sued before. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have to, legally present your case and be that advocate. If you're nominated as the power of attorney, show those legal documents, kind of put them in place.
And the next thing is some people think since just because their kids are over 18, they're still their kids and they have the ability to make those decisions when they don't.
Oh my gosh. That's like the number one thing. Cause I actually was hospitalized when I was in undergrad. And I was over 18 years old and my mom couldn't make decisions because I'm a legal adult at that point. So if you have a kid that's in school, get the medical power of attorney over them, because if they break their leg and they're, in excruciating pain in an emergency room where you can't talk, I couldn't think, none of that stuff, to sit there and have the phone, at that time I was incapacitated. So the doctors could not, I couldn't give them permission to talk to my mom because I was out of my mind in pain. I'm already, considered incapacitated at that point. So moral of the story is, and then at that time, that's where the doctors then start making those decisions about my life mm-hmm. instead of my mom. So the moral of the story is if you have children that are over 18, get the power of attorney on them. Get them to sit down for 15 minutes and write out some simple directives, okay? Because you never know, they might shatter their ankle, they might get in a car accident, whatever it is, and they are legal adults. You need that legal paperwork to say, I've been nominated to speak for them.
That's wonderful. Hey, folks, stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Jennifer Surman.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Again, you can get those replays at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insights on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Never miss the show. You check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Networks. Again, these networks are dedicated to empowering you to live a life of spiritual and financial freedom. Again, you can follow us at Saving with Steve Sexton on Facebook. We have Jennifer Sumac here. She's talking about wills, trusts, and stuff like that. Now we want to talk about special needs trust. Help us understand what a special needs trust is, what it's for, how it's operated.
Yeah, so special needs trusts are for people with special needs. So here's the thing. Remember, if we're going to go back, if you don't create this private trust, then the government probate system is the one that's going to take over, right? And so if you have a child that is special needs, that's going to need to be taken care of or has special rules, what they're allergic to, all of that, I highly suggest a special needs trust. That way you're determining, you know, how they're going to be taken care of rather than a court. Okay. Now we make these special needs trusts because here's the problem. I actually had this happen to me about 7 years ago where I had a family of five come to me after their mother had died. Okay. And what had happened is their mom passed away. They had a special needs sister. She was living with the mom. Mom passes away. The other four siblings thought, well, she's living there. She's special needs. We're going to be nice and we're just going to give her the house. Okay. And the problem with that is great intentions, terrible result. Because when they gave her that house, what that did was actually kick her off her SSDI. Okay. Which, because you're only allowed, if you're on state benefits, like, or federal benefits like that, you're only allowed so much income per year. So by giving her this huge asset, she was over those limits. She got kicked off of her SSDI. If you know anything about Social Security, once you're kicked off trying to get back on, I mean, it takes like 2 years to get your benefits back. Okay.
And on top of that, don't they try to attach those assets because they would like some of their money back?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they will try to attach to it. So it creates this major problem. Great intentions. We want to take care of our sister. We just did it the wrong way, legally and tax-wise, right, with the government and stuff. And so one of the things that we do, we create these private estates for special needs people. It's also going to have, I like to make guides, you know, in case you have somebody who has maybe is nonverbal, has particular allergies or what their medications are. So I like to make these guides along with it. But what you can do there then is take either money or an asset and put it into this special needs trust where it's protected, because then legally the beneficiary, your special needs person, does not own that house or does not have possession of those funds. So the government cannot consider that as some kind of lump sum or inheritance to kick them up over that level that they're allowed to make income-wise, right? So You have the funds or the asset in this special needs trust specifically for this special needs person. And then you can literally pay, if it's liquid money in there, you can pay them up to the dollar they're allowed per year so that they still get their benefits and they also get this income. If you don't create a special needs trust or even a guardianship trust, they're just slightly different, but if you don't create one of those, then the other option is court. You got to always understand that the other option is always going to be court, okay? And in that case, the other four siblings then would have had to go to court to get a guardianship over their sister, to give her money for finances, to take care of her healthcare issues, all of those kinds of things. So this guardian, special needs trust or guardianship trust, take care of that all in the private realm rather than having to filter through the court system.
Oh, wow. Now, there's a thing called an IRA inheritance trust. A lot of people have heard about it, but don't understand exactly how it works and who does it benefit for? When would it make sense to utilize a trust like that?
Yeah, for sure. So just when it comes to making private estates, you can make rules about your property and who gets it and how they get it, when they get it, why they get it, about anything. So it's very common to do substance abuse rules. It's kind of funny, like we have all these little things that have kind of filtered because it goes through our society and that, you know, translates directly down into how I draft, my clients' estates. Okay. So specifically, though, when it comes to IRA beneficiary trust, same thing. It's a contract. It's a legal structure, except we're putting your traditional IRA in there. And from there, we can divvy out these small amounts to people, either because they're a spendthrift, which means they would, if they got a lump sum, they would blow it all, right? Or because they have substance abuse problems, or because you're just trying to save your kids from these tax consequences. It could just, you know, they have nothing going on. You just want them to protect them from their own self. A lot of people don't realize that when you pass away, if you still have a traditional IRA or a 401k, actually 401ks always end up turning into traditional IRAs once you're gone. If you give that money to a beneficiary in just a flat lump sum, here's what happens. The statistic is that 78% of IRAs are gone in 18 months or less. Okay. So why? Well, you know, your kids didn't earn it, all right? So they don't appreciate it as much as you. And they don't realize this tax burden that they just initiated by doing that. And so usually what we'll see is they'll take the IRA money, your retirement, whatever's left over, they'll pay off their mortgage, they'll go on vacation, maybe they'll buy a new car, you know, whatever it is, that money is gone in a year, okay? All right, well, that's all fine and dandy until April of the next year, when they have to do their taxes. And the tax man actually considers that distribution, IRA distributions to beneficiaries, as a fully taxable event, as if it was income to the beneficiary. So if your kid's making $75,000 a year and they inherit $100,000 from your IRA, well, now the IRS says you just made $175,000. That kicks that IRA distribution all the way up to the highest tax bracket. Now you're paying, you know, right now 32%, might be 37%, you know. Well, the kid then says, I don't have that money. I paid off my mortgage. Well, the IRS doesn't care, right? So now they have to go take out like personal loans to satisfy their tax consequences. So we use the IRA beneficiary trust to, you know, help with spendthrifts so that people, your beneficiaries don't blow the money all at once. Certainly substance abuse. We can make these rules where we're divvying out money over time, you know, to somebody who has substance abuse issues and make them. You can also do where you have to pee in a cup, take these tests, make sure you're clean, you know, all these different rules. And then also for the tax consequences. So that your beneficiaries aren't blowing the money and then realizing, uh-oh, I didn't put, you know, over a third of this aside so that I can satisfy that tax consequence in a year. So we use the IRA beneficiary trust for a lot of different reasons to help beneficiaries basically and save them from themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to thank you for sharing that with everybody. I would like you to take a moment and just say, hey, guys, this is how you can get in contact with us at Posterity Legal. I will have some of your links and some information about Posterity Legal on our website. So if you're looking for that help, Jennifer's team can definitely help you.
Yeah, sure. So you can research me at www.posteritylegal.com. So Posterity is Posterity legal.com. There's a contact form on that website. So if you want to reach out to us, you can that way. You can also give us a call, 833-399-8585. It's 833-399-8585. Although I will say, hit like zero when you go through the phone tree, because there's all these different things. So if you're coming in wanting more information, don't go to the other departments, just hit zero. Okay. But yeah, you can send us, you know, go to the website, send us the contact form. That'll go straight to my assistant and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. And then you can also give us a call and we'll get back to you within 24 hours as well.
Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the show. The information you provide is, for most people that don't get it, it'd be life-saving.
Yes.
And life-changing. So we appreciate that. And folks, you want to really go and check out Posterity Legal. They can be a great help to you. And with that, thanks for being with us today, Jennifer. Stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, everything you need to know to make sure your money lasts as long as you do. Now, if you are still working, this is the time to take a look at how much you've contributed to your 401ks, 403bs, deferred compensation plans. If you're, you know, 50 or older, there's a $7,500 catch-up, which means you can contribute $30,500 for the year. So if you've got the extra, getting a bonus, this might be the right time to do that. Now, also, this might be the right time to start looking at your contribution for the next year. In addition to that, if you're still working, this is a time to leverage your health savings account, okay? The contribution limit for 2024 is $41,500, okay, for individuals, and $8,300 for family. And if you're over 55, you could actually put $9,300 for family and $5,150 for an individual. So if you can maximize that, you could use that for current medical expenses, long-term saving strategies, and all that kind of stuff. Now, the other thing that you can also do if you're still working or if you're not still working is you harvest your tax losses. Tax loss harvesting is a strategic approach to managing your investment portfolio that can help you minimize your tax liability while optimizing your overall returns. It involves selling investments that have declined in value to offset realized capital gains from other investments, thereby reducing the taxes owed on the current gains. And this strategy can be especially useful during markets during a downturn when losses are more likely to occur. Now, you only can apply $3,000 of capital losses if you don't have any gains. So you know what? You want to make sure that you do that properly. Now, other things that you could do, especially if you're retired, you could look at taking your required minimum distribution if you're over the age of 73. Now, many people like to give to charities. It could be their church, the Kiwanis, the homeless society, you know, breast cancer, whatever it is. Many people sit there and write that check. One of the big things you need to know is that check is not cashed before the end of the year. You cannot use it for a deduction. Secondly, if you're looking at getting a deduction or a reduction of income because you contribute to a charity and your standard deductions are too high where it won't help you, you can look at a qualified charitable distribution. Now, you have to be over 70 and a half and you can give up to $105,000 directly to a charity. Now, let's say you've got a $200,000 required minimum distribution and you decide to give $100,000 to a charity through a qualified charitable distribution. So you've got $200,000 you have to take out. You've given $100,000 away. You only get a 1099 for $100,000. That's right, folks. If you use a qualified charitable distribution, if you're over 70 and a half, hey, you can get income elimination. Saves you a lot of money in taxes. Next, there's also charitable trust planning. There's charitable remainder trust, charitable lead trust. You can utilize those to take money for taxable assets, put it in there, and create a tax-free income for yourself. Wow, okay? So it's really important you take a look at that. Last but not least, make sure you go take a look at your required minimum distributions. One of the big things to know about required minimum distributions, if you have IRAs and 401ks in your portfolio, you have to take a required minimum distribution separately out of the IRA, and you also have to take it separately out of your 401k, 403b, 457, TSA, TSP, and so on. If you don't, and you don't take the proper amount of required minimum distribution, you're going to get hit with a 25% excise tax plus penalties for not withdrawing it and paying plus the taxes on penalties, interest penalties on top of the money you didn't pay. So it's really very, very important. Last but not least, regardless if you're working for a company or you're retired, whether it's Medicare or your healthcare coverage, this would be a wonderful time to take a look at those items. Because when you take a look at those options, see if you can get, make sure your doctors aren't going away or they've moved to a different network. Make sure you have the drugs that you need. You might have a plan that's reducing benefits and you don't want to be in a position where you're going to have to get stuck paying a lot more. So take the time to look now before January 1st. Folks, I do want to thank you to join us today. I know Jennifer Cermak was outstanding when it comes to wills and trusts. You really want to take a look at that. And with that, I want to thank you. You guys have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton.